It's time to get brutally honest.
Was it Steph's 30th? Is that why?
Yep. I think it was.
I don't know. Boy, she's an old bag of dirt, hey?
I wouldn't go down that road, dude.
She's like 33 now.
Well, that's not old, dude. I'm 34. I got one name.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Hour 2 Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 on the TSN Go app. Happy Thanksgiving. Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan, Leafs Hawks tonight. You can hear it right here on TSN 1050. Watch it on TSN 4. So we're out of here at 6:30. The Tapman will be in here with a special Thanksgiving version of Yes Guy, No Guy.
He is going to be on fire.
It'll be jacked up. It should be a fun game tonight.
Greg, I think Gilbert's going to have to put an ice pack on his ear hole after the pregame show.
He's going to have a bandage around his head because that Tat Man is just going to...
He'll be wearing earmuffs during the game to protect his ears.
The Tat Man is going to hit him with... The other night, I don't know if you heard that opening.
Yes, guy, no guy.
Stretch. They had to stretch because I think they anthem and they...
That was in Winnipeg for opening night.
So long.
Was the Tat Man drilling him with yes guy, no guys?
No, but it was like Greg Gilbert needed CPR at the end of
the game. He was 14, in a body bag after that.
The 14 minutes of on because they had, I think the game started, what, like 7:17 or whatever it was?
Yeah, it was a good 15 minutes on top of what they were supposed to be doing.
We were driving home from the Mill Street pub. Mm-hmm. And it took me a while to get home, but I actually made it home just for puck drop.
Really?
From downtown.
Oh, see, I missed like the first 10 minutes.
Well, you live a little farther. But the Tat Man, I mean, you could tell the producer was probably in his ear like, oh, you need to stretch it out a little bit more.
Stretch it out.
Man, like they were talking about playoffs and like...
Hitch came up down in Dallas. It was a great conversation.
It was. Greg Gilbert earned every penny that he made that night. He was awesome, and so was the Tat Man.
Yeah, they're always great. You can hear them again around 6:30 for the pregame, and Ralphie and Bonesy will have the call just after 7, and this is it. I mean, if this is your team, this is the one shot you've got. If you want to see the Chicago Blackhawks, it's Thanksgiving night. That's it.
I'd like to see, and I was telling you guys this, I've watched Washington live. I've watched everyone play in the league now, like at least one game. I've gone and watched it. I like where Toronto's at. I still think they've got some fine-tuning and stuff. It'll be interesting to see what happens with that third pairing. We didn't even talk about your boy Marty Marintz got rinsed, eh?
Well, he got waived and he cleared. I don't know why anyone expected someone to pick him up. Like, who was honestly bracing themselves for Marty Marintz to get claimed?
Did you watch that guy in preseason? He was terrible.
He's been waived by the Oilers and the Leafs, like, over the past 10 years, the two worst teams in the league collectively.
The guy, honestly, look... He's a hockey player. But not in the NHL anymore. He should just go to the KHL, and if he wants to play there for 3 or 4 more years, go ahead. He's not an NHL player. He's not.
I think it's been determined.
Yes.
It's not happening.
If you're an NHL player, you get picked up on waivers.
Right.
Go to the KHL for 5 years and enjoy your life.
I guess at this point, he's still getting paid. He's on a one-way deal, so he's making money, and why would you run away from that cash?
It is also depth. Because if you can get him down in the minors,
oh, take it.
Keep him there because there's no guarantee that both of these Swedes work out. There's no guarantee that Roman Polak's going to have his game 100% when he gets back. This is for the Leafs, almost the perfect scenario. Because even if you call him an 8 in your depth chart, not a bad 8.
If he's your 8, you could be in a lot worse spot.
That's what I'm saying. So now all of a sudden you get in a playoff stretch. And down the stretch, you get guys who are nicked up, or you get into the playoffs. Like, Marincin playing in your organization anywhere other than your NHL team is a plus for me because the Leafs don't care about money. And it's a lot better than having a guy who's untested if you were ever pressed into it. And I only can speak from experience and talking to teams. Like, think about, for example, the Calgary Flames in 04. They were so decimated on the back end that Mike Commodore and Steve Montador played big minutes. Neither one of those guys were regular guys during the regular season, but they got hit with the injury bug down the stretch. And then the farther went into the playoffs, you needed that depth. So just like the Calvin Pickard grab, Marincin through waivers. Like
what's happening with Fair and Moore?
If you start to stockpile, all it does is add to the depth of your organization.
Yeah, it's a win-win situation.
I think
so. And let's be honest also, if you're Marincin, the jury is out on Borgman and Rosen and whether or not they can play in the league and consistently. What I've seen out of them, I've liked. I get the impression like they can play. But I think what was evident on Saturday with Cali Rosen is it's one thing to show it in exhibition. It's another to show it in the regular season.
It's a different
season.
Pace.
It's a different pace.
Even Borgman in Winnipag, he had a couple pizzas. He was...
Listen, they deserve a chance to find their way in the league, right?
That's how you find out about a player. You got to give them an opportunity. Let them play.
And that's what I was scared of. I thought Rosen's game wasn't very good the other night, and I was terrified that he was going to come out of the lineup, and now his confidence is banged up. Instead, you double down with him, and you continue to give him an opportunity to see if he can settle in.
Well, it sounds like Carrick's a little bit banged up, and he didn't look great on Saturday either. Babcock basically called him out for that postgame, and he was not paired with either of them today. It sounds as if Rosen and Borgman could go tonight. The game is right here on TSN 1050. You can watch it on TSN 4. Let's head down there right now. Catch up with our TSN hockey analyst. He'll be between the benches tonight. Here's Ray Ferraro joining us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. What's happening, Ray?
I have a heavy heart with my Red Sox about to be eliminated.
Well, don't go that far. They're rallying in the ninth. They just made it 5-4.
Really? I left my hotel. It was 5. As soon as the Beltran hit it off the wall to make it 5-3, I shut off the TV. I folded the tent. I'm a bad fan.
Yeah. And you threw the remote at the TV and you walked out of the room.
I put my jacket on and left. So now I'm back in business. Let's go Sox.
I think Farrell had a meltdown, too. Didn't he get tossed?
Well, Ray, do you think if the Sox lose, somebody gets rinsed for this? Because obviously in that big market, there's expectations. I'm sure Girardi is pretty happy they won that game yesterday because he got booed in the introductions. I mean, if these teams don't get
it.
Yeah, if they don't get it done, somebody's going to take the bullet, no?
Well, they had that beanball thing earlier on in the year, and the couple of the players, Pedroia in particular, wasn't very happy with the way Farrell handled it. The GM didn't hire him. So, I don't know. I mean, if somebody's going to... Someone's going to take the pipe, you know. Who it's always the guy at the top first. But I mean, they win the division. They get into this game. They've got their two best guys that they could have, Sale and Kimbrel, and they give up two in the eighth. And unless they can claw their way back here, I mean, I guess it's a good year. Baseball's tough to judge, though, isn't it? Like
so tough.
They play so long, and you're like, oh, they are actually losing to a better team, but. That might not matter.
Well, I guess Devers just hit an inside-the-park home run.
Oh, get out of town.
I'm not kidding. It looks like Fenway is ready to absolutely explode. It's 5-4, no outs in the ninth.
So that he must have hit that down the right field line, and it rolled around out there for a month. And
yeah, I didn't see where it went, but it's on in Boston. I mean, at least they're in it. So we'll keep you updated throughout the conversation.
Now, please, I can't walk in the rink here because I got to go through security. So I got to stand out here. I can't even watch.
Yeah.
I'm relying on you three knuckleheads.
Well, you can buy a ticket from a scalper and just stand there, and because I'm sure there's a few of them out there asking, yelling if you need tickets or not.
Yeah, I've already got asked twice. Here. I'm like, the game's in 3 hours, guys.
Well, that's the thing. This is a big game. I mean, the scalpers, man, did they take a beating for about a decade down there at the ACC. It was tough to watch.
$12.
The scalpers.
Okay, $12.
They were just pleading with you. Anything. Like, they were panhandling, essentially. They're like, will you please give me a penny for a ticket?
I know a couple of them, and they told me it's business is tough. It's not fun.
But I think it's back now. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's back. I mean, how exciting is this game tonight?
Well, just think of, so you've got an original six, which is always kind of interesting. You've got the two teams that have scored 15 each coming in. People have been trying to draw these comparisons for the last 18 months or so against, you know, the young Leafs to the young Blackhawks, and here they are. I mean, the Hawks come in for all their turnover, and well, they reacquired Patrick Sharp this year, but they've got seven guys in their lineup that have multiple cups still. Like, it's remarkable that they've had to change so many people, yet almost half of their team has won multiple Stanley Cups. So the people are I mean, why wouldn't you be excited about this? I mean, the one thing about you gotta love about Saturday night was after that first period, which was just a train wreck from the Rangers' perspective, the Leafs gave it all back, and then you're like, hey, look, you know, now this is going to be something, and then they kick it back on the track, and that's probably the first power play off a review that I've seen, and their power play comes through big for them, and that was a fun night. I mean, the games are fun to watch, and so why people should be pumped for tonight. It'll probably be 2-1.
Right.
By the way,
well, that's a thing, and reports coming out that Anton Forsberg is going to get the call.
He's playing tonight, so that'll take care of 2-1.
Yeah, exactly. Like I actually think he's a good young goaltender, but he's not Corey Crawford. So it's interesting. I think Q is testing him right away to see if he's got a little bit of resolve there to, and maybe giving a jolt to his team to say, hey, we got to tighten up here and don't hang your young kid out to dry.
And third step to that is, you know, Crawford's got an amazing record in his hometown of Montreal. They're there tomorrow.
Yeah, that's true.
So they give him the second of the back-to-back. But it is a thought, or find it, that's a good point, Noodles, is that, you know, so everything has gone perfectly for them. They've only given up 2 goals. And so now you throw this youngster in, this young kid that they don't really know. They got him in the sod trade. I mean, most of the players have only seen him for a month. And now you can see that's not Corey Crawford. So maybe that snaps guys into attention a little bit. The Hawks aren't going to have Nick Schmaltz, who's had a terrific start. He won't play tonight either. So, you know, the Leafs outside of Carrick are pretty healthy. And I heard you guys talking about the Borgman and Rosen, and they are going to play. Carrick won't play. And you know, Babcock was saying this morning that it wasn't a good night for Rosen. They thought he got better towards, you know, the last part of the game, but they don't want to rattle anybody here. They love these young kids. They think they're going to be really good players, and they've got to play. And so it'll be interesting when Carrick gets back. Like, you know, there's not room for everybody. I would think one of the two Swedes will have to go down in the relative near future, unless they're the third defensive pair together.
Right.
Well, it's true. I mean, we were talking about this earlier, how rookies, historically, they were always granted a grace period, and you understood it. There were going to be a lot of hurdles. And I would suggest that even in the modern game, probably 80-90% of them still do have the ups and downs and trials and tribulations. But we focus so much on that 10-20% that is just so superior. The Matthews, the McDavids, you know, guys like that, Zach Werenski, kids that roll in and just immediately at a young age take over the league. And I think sometimes we lose sight of the fact that it does take a while. And I think it's a perfect segue into Zach Hyman and his play on Saturday night, where he had a couple of brilliant offensive plays, something we haven't seen before. And I don't think he has it in him to eventually be a high-caliber offensive player. But he was a rookie last year. Like, of course he's going to get more comfortable. Why wouldn't we grant him that opportunity to look and feel better in his second year?
Because it's here, and they surprise so much. And now you can actually think about a Stanley Cup, and is, you know, what's the road to it? And now it becomes a major focal point of whether Hyman is qualified to play on that top line. And in particular, I was watching him the other night. And the goal where he missed the breakaway, and then he hunted the puck down, and then he ended up scoring again. I don't know if it's the number or what, or the fact that I knew I was coming in here to do Chicago and Kevin Dineen is here, but it looked a lot like Kevin Dineen. Like it was relentless, it was on the puck, and eventually it was a finish. And Hyman will get better. What do you have, 11 goals last year? Why can't 15-18 be in the mix for him? I think it can be.
Yeah. It should be playing with those caliber of players.
Absolutely.
Like, it's the old saying: "Give me 3 open nets, I'll get you one." I mean,
oh, but you don't think he earned that?
Absolutely.
He earned it for sure.
See, I think that there is going to be, and Babcock has said this: there will be power play time for him down the line. Like eventually. There's, you know, players are going to be moved in and out, and, you know, maybe not now, maybe in a year or so or whatever it is. but he got 11 goals last year, and he went forever without getting one. And I think there's a spot that he's carving out here, and it leads to some pretty consistent numbers for him. Not 27, but 15, 18. I think he can do that, and maybe he will prove in the long run to be the right guy to be on Matthews' left side.
What kind of totals are you putting on Alex Ovechkin now that you've seen him play two
96
games?
Goals.
Crazy, huh?
Well, Noodles was sitting there right in the front row the other night, and I mean, it's hard to believe that last year he looked, you know, he looked so sluggish or one-dimensional, and then they talked to him, and they, you know, Barry Trotz went and saw him in Moscow, and they talked about, you know, you got to score some goals around the front of the net once in a while. You know, you got to get to where, you know, can't just be from that spot. And, you know, he did lose a little bit of weight. He says he's in better shape. And, I mean, what a crazy start.
Yeah.
Like, to get off the hop like this. And I think last year he had, like, 15 goals or 17 goals at even strength. And, you know, now the Caps are less balanced. They need more from him. And, you know, maybe this is another 45 or 50 goal a year for him, but that's just a ridiculous start.
Yeah, I watched it. And to be honest, Ray, that the first period and a half, I thought he was a little bit on the outside. He wasn't as dangerous, but it was almost like Backstrom, I thought, was brilliant, and I know everyone wasn't playing together, but I thought that Verana is going to be a good player. That Washington team, to me, again, and I know I picked them to win the Cup this year, but it's like they're like San Jose and Anaheim to me. Until they do something in the playoffs, they continue to disappoint me. I didn't love Ovi's game, but it was almost like that first goal went in for him, and he's like, oh, yeah, I remember how to do this, because he took control of that game afterwards. And I watched the Montreal game the other night. He's starting to feel really good about his game. And though, you know, as a goal scorer, and, oh, you can speak to this too, you get a little confidence on your stick, things seem to kind of go in a little bit easier. You're not choking up your stick. You're more relaxed with the puck, and you're more relaxed in your game. And he certainly looks like that.
You think you're gonna score every night.
Mm-hmm.
It's impossible, but you're like, yeah, I'll score today. And if you don't, you don't even think about it.
Right.
Yet there's the other thing too that's pretty, you know, I was actually talked to Hyman this morning. I said, you know, he had to feel good to score early, and he's like, yeah, I know. He's like, man, if you go three games at the start of the year without scoring, it feels like 100. Yet if it's in the middle of February, you don't even think about it.
Yeah.
And just think for like, so now Ovi looks at the stat sheet and he's got 7 on the board already. And you don't think he thinks ahead a little bit, because we all do. You look and you go, yeah, this could be something good. I mean, he's already got 7 in his pocket. It's a crazy start.
Well, then you flip it to a couple of teams that are having struggles out of the gate. You look at Montreal, they're 1-2, and Price kind of stole one in Buffalo. Their opener.
He scored 3 goals.
They won in a shootout. They scored 3 goals. They had a bunch of shots and opportunities last night, but they got shut out by New York, and all of a sudden it's starting to feel like it did the first 4 or 5 games of the preseason in Montreal, and I can only imagine how they're handling it there. You know, they're freaking out. Yeah, full-out panic.
Hey, no patience there.
No chance.
But just think, like, they've got 2 shorthanded goals and 1 5-on-5 goal. That's all they got.
Right, yeah.
And so they're... their center ice position, I'm trying to quickly go through the league, but I'm going to say it's the worst in the league.
There's not even a question.
You know, like, they've got...
Well, Vegas, does Vegas have a worse center ice?
They might. I forgot about Vegas, to be honest with you.
They're 2-0, right? Ray.
Yeah, they... Fleury made, what, 162 saves in Dallas?
Yeah.
Or something, but good for them. You know, I mean, I guess I kind of forgot them, but, you know, I mean, they're brand new, and they're probably not in the top 20 at any position.
No, right.
And so, you know, but I mean, like, so Plekanec's coming off his worst season since his rookie year. Danault has had a fantastic year, but he's probably a third-line guy. Their first-line guy's never played center before. The guy that was supposed to be their first-line guy is a left winger who hasn't made a peep yet this year. I mean, there are offensive questions in Montreal that just aren't going to go away. I mean, they'll get stuff out of Drouin, of course they will. They'll get stuff out of Pacioretty. I mean, he scored 30 goals 4 years in a row, and I think Gallagher will have a bounce back here, but the goals aren't going to all of a sudden show up. No chance.
Well, I'll say this. The Leafs are in there on Saturday night, and that will set that marketplace on fire.
If they get their ass beat there?
If Toronto rolls in there and beats them 5-0 or 6-1, they will be going nuts. Absolutely nuts. Because you know there's people in Montreal that have been preaching for a while, let's blow it up, let's restart, let's reload, look what the Leafs did.
You signed Carey Price to a monster deal, though.
Yeah,
the idea in Montreal is to try to win during the window of Carey Price, and they're not even really close right now.
If you look at their team, like, what are they? Like, what is their... Carey Price is their bread and butter, but are they an offensive team? No. Are they a really good defensive team? No. Look at their defense. They're not.
Yeah.
So they're kind of halfway to being halfway. I mean, they're an average team right now, and I just don't see where all of a sudden it gets way better for them.
Well, then you got Winnipeg, and they start 7-2, 6-3, and they were up 3-1 on Calgary on Saturday night, and then it just went right downhill, and Maurice has already come out and said, yeah, you got us. Hellebuck is starting our next game.
Yeah, well, he should have started the home opener.
Right.
Like they
But they're a disaster again. I mean, there was a shift. That Bufflin shift, I can't remember which goal it was. I was in shock. Remember that, Ray?
It was the fourth one, and in the third period, the one where he was just, was it Brody that scored it? He ended up at the blue line, back behind the net.
Yes.
Over on the right side. Like, it's like he's got no brakes. On his skate.
You know who he reminds me of, Ray? Sorry to interrupt. Remember Sandis Ozilinch?
Oh, yes.
Like, he just used to play north, no south. Like, big buff. And Buff will rove around out there, and then he'll get physical, which is scary for a lot of guys, but he doesn't have any structure to his game. And that's scary if you're a defenseman. It's more scary if you're a goalie. Because there's no trust. You're like, I don't trust that this guy's going to have me on the back door because he's at the blue line right now.
Yeah, the one thing I thought I saw a lot of in that game, and maybe it's a little bit of panic that seeped in pretty quickly when they get thumped at home, is that they don't, in the offensive zone, they don't stop and compete on any pucks. They kind of wave their way by. And the problem with that is, of course, now you get, they're out of the offensive zone unless they control the puck. They're out so quickly, and now they're back in their end where it's not great. Like, they can look at a bunch of different things, but for my money, just watching the first two nights, they've got to compete harder on the puck. They've got to stop at it. They've got to make some contact. They've got to cycle the puck a little bit. And if they don't, they play this up and down race around game, and it's great when it works, but you know, you're already picking 13 goals out of your net, and that was supposed to be job one over the offseason.
Well, bad news, buddy. The Houston Astros are off to the ALCS.
Did they get any closer than that or
no? 5-4. Devers had the inside the park home run with no outs, and then they shut it down from there.
Yeah. Let's see. November, December. 4 months to spring training.
Yeah. You'll get back on the rails, buddy.
Oh, I will. I'll regroup. This game better be good. It better not be 1-0, or I'm going to be sour.
I'm hoping it's fun. It should be a good one. We'll catch you tonight on the telecast, and we'll chat again tomorrow at 5 p.m.
You betcha. Have a great one. Happy Thanksgiving, guys.
You too. Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Check out the new 2018s and get rates starting at 0% plus. Receive 5,000 Aeroplan miles with every purchase. Visit MapleToyota.com. Leafs, Blackhawks tonight on TSN 4 and right here on TSN 1050. Pre-game in about an hour. Marcellus Wiley on the insanity that was Week 5 in the NFL. And we got another game tonight. Mitchell Trubisky is making his debut for the Bears. Dub Bears. Big game tonight.
Dub Bears.
So we'll tee that up with Marcellus later in the hour. And MJ, I think, will join us around the table in the 6 p.m. hour. Yeah. Overdrive continues on the TSN Go app. Don't forget, Overdrive is looking to honor some grit-grinding beer leaguers. Get on Twitter and send us your tweets at TSN 1050 Radio. Your best beer league team name using the hashtag Beer League Contest. Hashtag Beer League Contest. Send those at TSN 1050 Radio, and you'll be entered to win back your league registration fees. A winner will be announced every Friday right here on Overdrive, and it's brought to you by the ASHL. Play with the largest rec hockey league in the world. For more details, go to TSN1050.ca. The Sox are out. Houston is on to the ALCS. The Tribe hoping to join them tonight. Yankees winning a barn burner last night, 1-0. Pitching duel. We haven't seen a lot of that. Cubbies and the Nationals currently tied 0-0 in the fourth down at Wrigley.
The Yanks got swept. I think Girardi would have got fired. He still might get fired.
He might, because the fact that he didn't challenge that pitch and that play, and then his initial reaction to it and his explanation was so ludicrous.
Because that's what Twitter was saying. What's more ridiculous about the non-challenge is the explanation.
Yeah, I didn't want to throw my pitcher out of his rhythm. Right after that, he gave up like back-to-back bombs, wasn't it? Or a bomb like immediately. And yeah, so you did throw, whatever the rhythm was, it was a brutal rhythm. You couldn't have made it any worse. And then I believe the next day he finally came in. He's like, yeah, you got me. That was awful. I don't know what I was doing. How did I not challenge? And New York does not take lightly to that kind of a mistake.
No.
They will make you a whipping boy quickly. And the thing is, though, the Yankees...
They got a good young team, don't they?
Yankee fans, as crazy as they can be, I have to believe there's a part of them that thinks they're playing with house money.
Yeah, like...
They were not supposed to contend until next year or the year after that. This was a surprise how well they've come together.
Right.
And what Judge has done, and Gregorius has done, and Sanchez and Bird. So... I guess it's crazy to think of Yankee fans as reasonable. They never are. But you'd like to believe there's a part of them that are approaching this year the way Leaf fans approached last season.
So if Babcock made a mistake in the playoffs against Washington, let's just say that there was a call that could have been, like, it's almost the same situation. You're playing with house money. There wasn't that big of an expectation for them to beat Washington. But yet you're there and you think, okay, it doesn't matter. They're there. You don't sit back and say, we're playing with house money. You sit back and saying, what the hell was he thinking? And I can see that, but the Yankees are a good young team. So there's no reason to believe that they're not going to have success in years to come.
They should keep turning things around.
That Judge is
a beast. Well, you see that catch he made last night?
Did you see how small his baseball glove is? It's like he has a boy's small glove.
He's 6'7".
He's a giant. He's got.
Dude, I know, but it's the big leagues. You can get whatever glove you want. If you ever see him catches, it looks like he has a little.
But do you think house league glove on? Extended glove, because like Chara has a long stick because Chara's 6'8". So he actually through the league gets an extension of.
Do you
a
know?
Stick.
Have you seen it? Have you?
I haven't paid attention to it. He's not going to walk around with like a novelty glove though. What's
he
going to do?
What if he had the hamburger helper glove on his hand, like because his hand is so.
Dude,
big.
I'm not talking about the glove guy, the guy that goes to the ballpark with the glove the size of a car.
Mm-hmm.
But his glove is on. It doesn't fit his hand.
But it all comes down to comfort, man. Have you seen Tulowitzki's glove?
It's a piece of garbage.
It's like a piece of garbage. Yeah, because he refuses to upgrade and change it because he's so comfortable with it.
He had to change it once last year because a ball literally went through it.
Mm-hmm. It got like stuck.
It's like Archer's Irby.
Yeah, right.
It's like sewing his gear in the clubhouse.
I understand that. You get comfortable with equipment and that's
true.
What you're
it's
into.
Just, but it's almost like Judge walked in and was like, "Ah, just give me that glove. It doesn't even fit." But he's like, "Just put it on his hand."
Worked for him last night.
Yeah.
But I don't even think it's that impressive when a guy that size makes a catch like that.
He just leaned over the fence and grabbed
it. It's like a 7-footer dunking. That's not impressive. Of course you can dunk. You're 7 feet. You know, like, yeah, good grab. You caught it over the wall, but you're 6'9" or whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll see where the Yankees take it tonight. We're tracking the Cubs and Nationals and Dodgers, D-backs later tonight. Again, it's just a great time for sports. You got Leafs Hawks tonight. The Raptors are back in town. They're back at the ACC. And
what a gig that is. Hawaii?
Yeah.
For what, a 6 or 7 day stretch?
Tinder would have been on fire over there.
Yeah, I wonder what that would have been like.
Whoa.
It's actually a great way to start. I don't know if it was necessary because it seems like a lot of travel.
Right.
When you know, like players, the NBA players are always complaining about the travel. Yeah. The amount of games they play, the back-to-backs, the amount of travel, the amount of times they feel like they're jet-lagged throughout the season. To the point where Adam Silver earlier this week was non-committal to the idea of staying with 82 games. And he said maybe in the future we address that to reduce the amount of games. So you get that every single year. It's an annual event. And then the Raptors go out of their way to go to Hawaii.
Yeah.
And BC. And start off their season way out of rhythm, like seven time zones away. But at the same time, when they were playing those games, it was like 1 a.m. No one was even paying attention to what they were doing.
But that's my point about the whole Hawaii thing. Don't you want to keep it in Toronto and keep the interest up? And they're in the city, and it's like, here they are, we're back.
That's what I'm saying. It feels like camp starts today because they're actually back in
Hawaii
Toronto.
Trip. Hawaii's not exactly close.
Dude.
It's a six-hour flight from L.A.
Right, which is a five-hour trip away.
And through a busy schedule and a busy season, why would you want to start that off? For training camp.
I don't know.
It is Hawaii, though. I like Hawaii.
I'm sure Hawaii is a great spot, but do you really want to be there when you know that you're on the clock?
No.
And the coach is watching. You're trying to make the team?
No, but I mean, if you're Kyle or DeMar, those guys are going on luaus. They are, like I say, if they're single, they're swiping right. Like, they are having a time
I'm sure
of
they
their
could.
Life.
I'm sure they sure. could. I wonder what the big sport is in Hawaii.
I don't know.
Basketball, football.
Their university, I think, is pretty popular.
Yeah, University
don't
of Hawaii.
Don't they have a Pro Bowl there every year?
They used to. Logistics, though, they're like, forget it.
Yeah, it's a long way. It is a long ways to go, but it's Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
I've been several times.
Well, I'm sure you have.
Good time.
He looked like he had a good time. All right, Marcellus Wiley coming up. What the hell's going on in the NFL right now? Like, this was the craziest weekend. This is why it's as popular as it is. It is a constant soap opera every single week, but this felt as if it was brought to a completely different level.
Yep.
J.J. Watt and Odell Beckham Jr. done for the year. Jerry Jones threatening players, saying if you disrespect the flag, you won't play. Coaches allegedly doing cocaine before they're going to players' meetings.
Dude, I've seen a lot of things. That's possibly the craziest thing I've ever seen in sports.
To me, the Laramie Tunsil is still...
Don't forget, they're both with the same organization.
Dude, he's an O-lineman. This guy was the O-line coach. Tunsil and Forrester were boys.
That's crazy.
Like, Tunsil would have been working closer with him than anybody else in the organization.
Tunsil is Forrester and Einhorn is Finkel.
Just spirit animals. Somehow they came together. So we'll catch up with Marcellus Wiley and get his take on what went down. And how about Roethlisberger's comments after
Maybe
five picks?
Maybe I don't
picks?
Have it anymore.
Like, how crazy was that That's comment? Insane. It's week five. He's like, I don't know if I can play anymore. Marcellus Wiley, our NFL analyst, next. All right, MJ, Mike Johnson around the table in about 20 minutes. Leafs Hawks tonight right here on TSN Radio. Watch it on TSN 4. The Monday Nighter on TSN tonight as well. Mitchell Trubisky making his debut. Bears Vikings, but this past weekend was crazy. Crazy.
Storylines are insane.
The storyline's insane. You've got coaches. It's got to be the O-line coach down in Miami.
It's got to be.
I mean, it's got that is Chris, like a TMZ Kardashian Hollywood story.
Chris Forrester. Doing something.
Got into it, and it gets out because he sent the tape to a peeler in Vegas, I believe. And she makes it go viral. And then he resigns today.
What did she post it on? Facebook or something?
Yeah, posted on Facebook. And it was for like social injustices. And I don't know the whole details of why she thought she was doing it. But I guess she's pulled it back. But it's been screen grabbed. It's out there. There's no going back now.
Yeah.
Let's bring in our NFL analyst, Marcellus Wiley. What's up, Marcellus?
Hey, what's up, brothers? Crazy, crazy weekend, right?
Well, what's the craziest thing for you that came out of the weekend?
Well, I mean, look, you see a coach sniffing some white powder. It explains a lot of my 10-year experience in NFL. I mean, coaches used to be amped up on a different level, but that's wild. I can't say it's something that is that crazy because we all know there's a subculture, things that are under the radar, things that are out of the camera lens that occur in any workplace, especially the NFL experience. So when I saw it, I just kind of shook my head and said, yeah, makes sense. Coach was out there irate. Coach was out there crazy at times. And, look, they're human beings as well as anybody, so I know they deal with some real issues, substance abuse issues. I think the interesting thing right now is just the turmoil and the controversy around the anthem and the protests right now, and how it's so displaced from its original intent. And a lot of people are to blame for that, and a lot of people are the reason for that. But the saddest part about it all to me is that the voiceless and the powerless and the people who were supposed to have the greatest need and impact from these same protests have been forgotten in this political warfare going on between our vice president and players and sidelines, and just so much demonstration, so much in statement, but the actions are now subsiding because everyone's getting caught up in this political warfare.
Well, what did you make of Jerry Jones, who was, I don't know, he was kneeling a couple days ago, he made sure he was on camera, and then he comes out with a statement saying, if I catch anybody kneeling during the anthem, you're not going to play.
Yeah, I mean, this one is nuanced. Let's be real. It's one, what is your First Amendment rights? Are they really being infringed upon? That's a conversation in itself. And then the second thing is workplace environment and the rules of that. What employers can tell employees. Like, I played in the NFL that they told you couldn't play if you have facial hair. The Yankees still is probably one of the teams that has that kind of code and creed. There are certain things you just can't do at the job, and we all know what those things are. Some places it's a little more wider and broader in scope, and some places it's pretty narrow. So this falls in the lap of a lot of different issues of what can you tell your employees to do, and then to be real, what are their freedoms and liberties to express themselves no matter what those rules are. We find ourselves right here, but I do know one thing. He put his players, especially his black players, in an uncomfortable position, but knowing Jerry Jones like I do and playing for the Dallas Cowboys, I think he had a silent understanding and agreement in that locker room before he made that statement.
So you think he knew what the answer was, that they weren't going to do it anyway?
Yeah, I mean, let's be frank. Those guys haven't protested. I'm sure you may have asked indirect, or maybe you want to keep it indirect for plausible deniability. You know, you don't want to just say it and have to deal with that. But if the record speaks for itself, they haven't protested. And he's like, well, let's keep it that way. And then you come out a little more audacious in your statement because you know there's not going to be anyone who betrays that silent agreement. So as much as it looks like a cocky move and a move that is really handcuffing those players, there's not much evidence to the contrary.
Well, that's the thing, though. You're right. I mean, forever we hear about all these players that do certain things, whether it's on the field, off the field, different transgressions, different distractions, and then those players get labeled as guys that can't be touched because if they get brought in, it's going to be too big of a distraction. And how could the football program possibly continue? And here's Jerry Jones creating the biggest distraction of them all, because now he's put all of his players on notice, and all of the media in Dallas is going to go right up to Dak Prescott, right up to Elliott, right up to Dez Bryant, and white players as well, and be like, what do you guys make of this? What do you think of it? This is a huge distraction for a team that just got beat again this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, you're forced to react. You're forced to move, even if you don't want to move. And let's be real, the clarity of the protest is not everyone who is standing isn't in support of the protest. So you got to think there are guys who are standing who are saying, hey, I support the cause, but I just won't protest. That's a different arm, a different antenna of the protest. But now Jerry Jones has used that and maybe strangled his own players by saying, if you do nothing, you've done something. And then that's not where you want to put a player who's there to play football, who walks into a stadium for 3 hours and is ready to just go after his opponent, now have to be attacked by the media and the criticism and people who are making judgment of them doing nothing. Think about it. Doing nothing may be the worst thing they can do this week just because of the pressure Jerry Jones created.
What injury was worse in the NFL? I mean, Odell Beckham, or was it J.J. Watts, or what type of ripple effect are you going to have on their organizations?
Yeah, I think it's Odell. I mean, if you look at it, obviously both guys are supremely talented, J.J. Watt and Odell. But they were the number one ranked defense last year without J.J. Watt, missing 13 games last year. And not saying that you won't miss them, but obviously they've shown that they can succeed without them. Not the case in New York. They haven't shown that they can succeed. That offense can have firepower without Odell. We saw it from week one when he was out to week two to week three where he really exploded and they played better. Still no wins, but still the life of that offense, that heartbeat, what really gives it a jolt of energy and makes it have tremendous firepower is Odell Beckham Jr. And you saw the tears, and the tears come from all that work and the dedication he has to his craft. A lot of times we get caught up in the theatrics and the blonde tips on his hair, but the dude puts in tremendous work to be one of the top receivers in the game. And when you have that type of injury, you question if you can even return to that form, let alone all the work that's lost. And the saddest part about the NFL experience is how fickle it is. One of the reasons I don't look backwards, and I'm glad I'm not playing, because imagine if you eat everything that you're supposed to eat, you go get proper rest, you have a six-pack, you're perfectly in shape, you're ready to go, you know your assignment, you go out there and you're ready to destroy someone, and in one play it's all gone. And rehab is not to get you better. Rehab is to get you to where you used to be. Then you have to work to get better. And all that lost time while other guys are getting better, you're just trying to return back to ground zero, is what's so frustrating. That's why we saw those tears. Odell Beckham will be sorely missed.
With Marcellus Wiley, it's a perfect segue into what I think in any other week would have been a massive story, and that was the comments from Roethlisberger postgame. Let's hear what he had to say yesterday.
I'm not playing well enough.
Why is that?
Don't think so, but maybe I am. Maybe I don't have it anymore.
So this is a future Lock Hall of Famer. This guy's won a couple of Super Bowls. He's a beast. He takes beatings. He keeps getting up. He's had a bunch of injuries. He keeps rehabbing. But after last season, he went public with the idea that he's contemplating retirement. He came back, and now through 5 weeks, he has not looked very good. He threw five picks at home against the Jags yesterday, and he comes out and says, maybe I don't have it anymore. If you're Mike Tomlin, if you're a member of that Steelers organization, how do you possibly react to that?
Yeah, you really have to sit him down. As the old cliche goes, once you start thinking about retiring, you're actually retired. There's something to that. And right now in the locker room, we would say that Ben Roethlisberger is leaking. Leaking. That means you're starting to show the cracks in your mindset. And football's a game of great skill, but greater will. Doesn't seem like he wants it the same. Let's just be honest about this. When you're feeling invincible, when you know you're the man, when you know that when you step on that field, you're able to create circumstances, you never even in jest, even in joke, and even in sarcasm, say something like that. But for him to say that, and you couple it with his offseason, you couple it with the CTE discussion that's been going on around, and Ben Roethlisberger has put himself in that position before. You put yourself in a position where Ben Roethlisberger actually reported a concussion, which is rare for the NFL player, and I'm not mad that he did that. But all these dominoes are starting to fall where Ben Roethlisberger has now had a new priority enter his mindset that really undermines what an NFL mindset needs to be. So he's over there laughing. He's over there shrugging it off. He's taking acceptance and responsibility, but he's also showing you that maybe the end game is different for Roethlisberger than it needs to be for your franchise quarterback. Sit him down. Get to the truth of the matter, because if not, the players are going to start to turn on him, and they're going to turn fast.
We had an argument before you came on about the coach that was snorting coke or whatever, the white powder. Do you think this guy gets another job even if he comes out and says, I'm rehabbed, or I've gone through, I've made mistakes? Do you think a year from now that an organization would hire him?
You know, it's interesting. That video taken at the workplace, correct? That's disturbing, because that's what hurts you more than anything. I think the substance abuse issue, you can forget about that over due time. The fact that you have an issue can all be forgotten. But when you commit that same infraction, that same issue on our time, on our schedule, that makes it harder to forget and ignore on your resume. That said, he can be an anonymous enough figure. He's an offensive line coach. No one knew his name before yesterday in this video. Let's be real. That's a situation where time can heal that wound. He gets the proper treatment. He has to go to a lower level. Let's say he's just an assistant, not an offensive line coach, and he works his way up in good graces. We saw this happen before, and you see guys with substance abuse issue. Let's talk about Steve Sarkisian, who becomes the USC head coach, has his substance abuse issues, then all of a sudden becomes a coordinator, assistant first, and then a coordinator. Now he's back in the NFL as an offensive coordinator of the Falcons. There's a road that he can travel to get back and redeem himself, but first he has to get help and address the issue and disappear in that moment.
Great catching up with you. As always, we'll do it again later in the week.
All right. Take care, guys. Talk soon.
There he is, Marcellus Wiley, longtime NFLer and our NFL analyst, generally joining us Fridays at 5:40, checking in this afternoon on Thanksgiving.
Yep.
It's a Grit Grinder. It's always great catching up with him. And that's, we did the best we could to try to put everything together for one segment. Man. But there's a million.
We could have done an hour chat with him.
There's a million more things. We didn't even talk about Rodgers and what he did yesterday to the Cowboys. And
that's
the fact
nothing.
Nothing.
That's nothing compared to
nothing.
He's like number 12 on the pecking order.
So far down the list.
Crazy storylines.
Trubisky's making his debut tonight. Second overall pick.
Never mentioned his name once.
Not even on the radar. A crazy weekend in the NFL. Final half hour for us.
Yep.
We got the pregame at 6:30. Oh, you're out of here going to the panel. We'll see you tomorrow at 4 p.m.
We'll chat then.
MJ's going to join us around the table. MJ's we'll keep teeing up the game tonight. Spin you around the NHL. We'll do that next.